In 10. 5 seconds to 1993. Happy New Year's Rockin' Eve 93.
Recapping now for you once again, if you've just joined us, an explosion underground in the garage section of the World Trade Center in New York City has killed now 3 people, according to the New York Port Authority, and has injured at least 150 people. Hundreds of people, as we speak, are still being evacuated from the twin-story towers of the structure and a hotel in the complex as well at the southern tip of Manhattan Island.
See, the Tyrannosaur doesn't obey any set patterns or park schedules. The essence of chaos.
Well, as you can see, the parts of the building have collapsed. The fire has indeed engulfed the vast majority of this compound that has been
Bonnie, the entire roof is gone.
The entire roof is gone. Mike, what else can you tell us? Any sign of firefighting equipment?
I know. None whatsoever. And there's our shot from, you'll remember, Bonnie, what we refer to as farm cam. That's looking from the north side into the compound. Apparently, the north side is not involved yet, but it appears the rest of the compound is filled with that orange fire and acrid black smoke.
Also, within the past 10 days, past week, federal authorities surrounded the compound, very close to the compound, with razor-sharp concertina wire to prevent people from running out. That may, in this case, prove to be hazardous.
Still no sign of anyone coming out, Bonnie.
Mike, at this point, the latest figures we have is that there are 95 people inside, of them 17 below the age of 10, a total of 25 below the age of 18.
Phil? Hey, Phil? Phil? Phil Connors? Phil Connors, I thought that was you.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for watching.
Hey. Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Not a chance.
Ned! Ryerson! Needle-nosed Ned, Ned the Head, come on, buddy, Case Western High!
Most people remember him with his band, the Mothers of Invention. But he composed some classical pieces as well. More recently, he testified on Capitol Hill against mandatory record labeling. His family was at his side when he passed away yesterday at his home in L.A. He was buried today. In an interview on the Today Show, broadcast last May, Zappa said he didn't care about his legacy.
It's not important to even be remembered.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ. Quite a few albums that I love came out in 1993, and it was very difficult for me to put together a definitive top 10 albums list for that year. But since it's episode number 93 of the podcast, I gave it a shot. I was a freshman and sophomore in college in 1993, and I was discovering a lot of music at the time, new and old. I will reluctantly count down my top 10 albums, but first, I have to acknowledge a few albums that didn't quite make the cut. For example, Sound of White Noise by Anthrax, which was mentioned recently on the Thrash episode of the podcast. And speaking of Thrash, there's an album called Heartwork by the death metal band Carcass, but Heartwork was more of a thrash metal sounding album, and I really love that record. Exile in Guyville by Liz Phair. I love that album. I've played several songs from them on the podcast. I guess there's a few songs I don't like as much, which maybe brought it down, but that is an amazing record, Exile in Guyville. I also love Superstar Car Wash by the Goo Goo Dolls. I already did an entire episode about them, but that's a great record. If you heard the 2-Minute Warning episode, I played a song by Fugazi from a great album they put out in 1993 called In on the Kill Taker. It was so hard for me to leave all these records out of the top 10. For example, I spoke very highly of Pearl Jam's second album, Verses, on the Pearl Jam episode. And while I do really love a lot of that album, there are a couple of terrible songs that kind of drag it down. An oddball record from 1993 that I like a lot is a record called Hit List by the Heartthrob Mob. You can hear a couple of songs from that album on the second Sunset Strip episode. Great songs, but some production issues on that record. If you heard my 1989 episode, my favorite album from that year was a record called Home Again by a Canadian band called The Doughboys. The Doughboys had an album in 1993. It was their major label debut, actually, a record called Crush that came out on A&M. I really love at least half of that album, but it just doesn't quite hold up all the way through. But check out the first song from Crush by the Doughboys called Shine. More albums that it was especially difficult for me to leave off this list. The first being the self-titled debut by a Portland power trio called Pond. The record was released by Sub Pop, and I really enjoy this album all the way through. And then there's an album called Mush, which was the third album by a British punk band called Leatherface, fronted by Frankie Stubbs. This is a classic album, great record, really hard for me to leave it out of my top 10 of 93. Let's hear a song by Leatherface from Mush called I Don't Want to Be the One to Say It. All right, so I guess we've arrived at my top 10 personal favorite albums. Remember, favorite is different from best. These are my personal favorites. Albums to be released in the year of 1993. At number 10 on my list is a record by a local band, at least local for me at the time. Growing up in a suburb of Milwaukee, there was a great music scene in Milwaukee in the 90s, but Alligator Gun were my favorite local band, and I still love their songs. And this album, this was their first full-length album called Shirk, S-H-I-R-K. It's a really fun album with great songs, like this one, Evergreen Lawns. I just need to play another song by Alligator Gun from Shirk. So how about this one? A song called Notch. Said you never trust me.
Tried so hard to let go. I threw your things out in the trash. And when I went back, would you know if they were already gone? I can't understand why you're pissed. We were stupid then. Doesn't mean we're not stupid now. I'm just so glad that we're together. Even though we fight, even though you know I'm always right, I guess we'll always be this way. All the cards and letters.
Coming in at number 9 on my list is a record that I still remember walking down State Street in the afternoon to buy on the day it came out. I was still punched in at work at the student union, but I just went for a walk for a few blocks to buy this album and then took it back to work and popped it in the boombox. I was a huge fan of this band at the time. Still like them a lot. This was their fourth album, but their major label debut after two records for Sub Pop. It was released by Elektra, an album called Gentlemen by a band out of Cincinnati called the Afghan Whigs. There is actually a whole 33 and a third book about this album written by Bob Gendron. It's a very dark record, written and produced by singer Greg Dooley, who definitely seemed to have a bleak or pessimistic attitude about love and relationships. Here's an example, a song called When We Two Parted.
Oh,
Coming in at number 8 on my list is an album called Our Bodies, Ourselves by the Mr. T Experience. I already interviewed the brains behind this band, Frank Portman, a.k.a. Dr. Frank, on episode number 21 of the podcast and played several songs from this album on that episode. It was the band's first album without second guitar player John Vaughn and is, in my opinion, the band's best album. Just great songs. Let's hear one that I didn't play, at least I don't think I played it, on the Dr. Frank episode, a song called The Dustbin of History.
The dustbin of history.
At number 7 on my list of my personal favorite albums that came out in 1993 is a real hidden treasure of an album called Been There by a pop-punk band originally formed in 1989 in Phoenix, Arizona, but they relocated to Seattle in 1990. This is a band called Best Kissers in the World. Not the greatest band name, but a great band. This was actually the band's first full-length album. After 3 amazing 7-inch singles and 2 killer EPs, a self-titled EP that was released by Sub Pop, and an incredible 5-song EP that kicked off their record contract with MCA. That EP was called Puddin', and it's highly recommended. It's amazing. Honestly, if you put all the songs together from those previous releases, the singles and the EPs, you have a much better collection of songs than the album, which has a couple of clunkers. But I love most of this record, especially the song we already heard, great song called Bleeder. And then there's this next song, which is the last song on the album, amazing tune called You Love Sleepin'.
Lonesome as I am.
At number 6 on my list is the second album by a Seattle-based pop-punk band called Flop. Band's first album, Flop and the Fall of the Mop Squeezer, is one of my favorite albums of all time, and I've tried to get the band's frontman, Rusty Willoughby, to appear on the podcast, and maybe that'll still happen. That first album was pop punk at its finest. It doesn't get any better. Miles better than Green Day, for example. Like I said, one of my favorites ever. But this record, the second album, Whenever You're Ready, it's just a work of genius. It's far different. It's not just simple pop punk. There's just so much more going on. Great production and incredible songwriting. It shows what a great year 1993 was, that this record is only number 6 on my list and that the Best Kissers were number 7. It just shows how much I love all this stuff that came out in 93, because a lot of years, Best Kissers or Flop would have been much higher. This album, Whenever You're Ready by Flop, was released by Epic Records with zero promotion. The labels were just signing all of these bands at the time, anything remotely alternative or whatever they were going for at the time. They were signing everything and just tossing the records on a pile. It didn't make much sense. Looking back, they weren't even putting in the effort so you could describe it as throwing it at the wall and seeing what would stick. They weren't even trying. They weren't even throwing it at the wall. You know, they weren't even getting it that far. It was just going in a pile on the floor. So Flop's first album had been released by an indie label called Frontier, and so would their third, after Epic's just epic failure to promote this album in any way. But it's such a great record, Whenever You're Ready by Flop.
Just the letter that you said to me.
At number 5 on my list is a record called Earth vs. the Wild Hearts. The Wild Hearts are one of those bands far better known overseas, but with a loyal but small cult following in the United States. This was the band's first full-length album. And, you know, this band, the Wild Hearts, was a creature unto itself, sort of like a modern version of Cheap Trick, insofar as they were just one of those rock and roll Frankenstein-type bands. Just they drew upon a wide variety of influences, put it all together to make something very special. This is a song from Earth vs. the Wild Hearts called Everlone. We'll be right back. At number 4 on my list is the third album by a band that is definitely one of my top 10 favorite bands of all time, a Scottish indie pop band called Teenage Fan Club. They called the album 13 because it featured 13 songs, but also, if you look at the cover art, the color scheme, and the fact that a basketball is featured prominently, they were pretty obviously having a go at Pearl Jam. If you think about Pearl Jam's basketball fandom and their album title, 10. There was a lot of hype around Teenage Fan Club's previous album, Bandwagon-esque, and many people seemed to view this record, 13, as a disappointing follow-up, but I strenuously disagree. I think it's a great record. We already heard a song from it called The Cabbage. Now let's hear a song written and sung by the band's bass player, Gerard Love. Great song called Radio. I think I'll kill the radio. Don't wanna hear this song. Can't relate to yesterday. What we did was wrong. Yeah. Now you lighten up my day with your view. At number 3 on my list is the third album by a pop-punk band out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina called Superchunk. We'll be right back. This record, On the Mouth, was the band's last album to be released by indie label Matador Records, and they would release all of their subsequent albums on their own, now hugely successful label called Merge Records. I would say this album was the band at its peak. The previous record, No Pocky for Kitty, was brilliant, and the next album, Foolish, would also be very good, but On the Mouth was when it really came together for Superchunk. It's a cohesive collection of songs, just damn good songs all the way through. Great album by a great band. We already heard the first song from the record, Precision Auto. Let's hear probably my favorite song from On the Mouth by Superchunk, a song called Package Thief. Alright, so at number 2 on my list of my personal top 10 favorite albums to be released in 1993 is a record called Icky Metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, they spell metal that way. It's by another band from Chapel Hill called Archers of Loaf.
Stuck a pin in your backbone, spoke you down from there, all I ever wanted was to be your spark. Breaking it up on the radio.
and this album was really the ultimate in indie rock in 1993. I'm not sure how it will sound to someone in 2015 who has never heard it before, but in 1993, when I was a 19-year-old sophomore in college, this record was incredibly important to me, and I listened to it over and over, and I still love it to this day. Arches of Loaf would go on to release a brilliant single on Superchunk's label, Merge, and an insanely great 10-inch EP for Alias, in both of those in 1994. Then in 1995, they had another full-length for Alias called Vivi, which I have to admit was pretty disappointing at the time, at least for me. But then they signed to a major for their next album, All the Nation's Airports, released by Elektra in 1996, and I love that album. It's exceptional. But back to Icky Metal. We already heard the first song, a song very near and dear to my heart, called Web in Front. Now let's hear another classic by Arches of Loaf from their record Icky Metal, a song called Wrong. And now, coming in at number one on my list, my personal favorite album to be released in 1993. So, I already played the title track from this album on episode number 60 of the podcast. And believe it or not, when I started doing this podcast, probably the episode that I most wanted to do was an episode with this guy, Adam Schmidt, about this record, Illiterature. And I tried, I really tried, but I have been unable to make it happen. Illiterature was Adam Schmidt's second album, and I liked the first album, World So Bright, but a lot of it to me was a little bit generic, jangly 90s pop, whereas Illiterature is just something else entirely. Are sort of two halves to this album, and I don't know any other way to describe the heavy rock half but angry. It's melodic and catchy as hell, but loud and angry. Adam Schmidt produced the record himself, and he even played all the instruments on some of the songs, and it just sounds amazing, at least to my ears. We'll be right back. But of course, what really makes the album great is the songs, and not just the catchy, loud, angry songs. That's only half the story. The other half of the album, the other half of the songs, are these bitter, melancholic, soul-bearing ballads, just pretty brutal stuff. But the songs, they're incredible. Every song on this record, Illiterature by Adam Schmidt, every song, in my opinion, is great. So I found an article online from Billboard magazine from September of 1993 about the release of this album, and I wanted to read some from that article. Illiterature marks a progression in Schmidt's songwriting style from his initial almost scattershot approach to a more focused, groove-worthy sound. Most basic tracks were recorded with a full band, although several cuts featured Schmidt on all instruments. Schmidt's new songs range from the anthemic title track to the metalloid pop of Catching Up to the splendidly chiming guitars of More of the Same. Much of the material was written last year during Schmidt's recuperation from a car accident that left him virtually immobile for almost 6 months. Quote, "It had a lot to do with why this album turned out the way it did," Schmidt says. "You sit around when you're in a leg cast and you can't do anything but just think, and I did a lot of thinking about what it is that I'm really trying to do and why I don't like the first album as much as I wanted to like it. The new album is a lot more thought out," he adds. "It's more what shouldn't I do when I'm in a recording studio as opposed to what should I do. I'm usually tempted to just go overboard and do 10 guitar tracks and 10 keyboard tracks and 10 background vocal tracks. I think the idea was to figure out where to say stop on this album. So Adam Schmidt released one more album, Demolition, in 2001. Good stuff, but not a masterpiece like Alliterature. You can buy Alliterature for $7.99 for the MP3s on Amazon and iTunes, and I highly suggest you do. Please, everyone hearing this, go buy this album, Alliterature by Adam Schmidt. It's an amazing piece of work, an absolute lost classic of 90s rock. So there you have it, my top 10 personal favorite albums to be released in the year of 1993. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with the second to last song from Alliterature, one of those brutal ballads I was talking about, a song called Thanks for Showing by Adam Schmidt. Till next time.
Did I ever tell
but thanks a lot for showing. It was me you didn't need. So I've lived with your decision, and this place it put me in. Now I'm looking back on something I once thought would never end. And you can't say I'm just an old flame. You can't say that hearts will mend.
Back.